Morning. Today's daf in Shabbos is daf Chaf. We're back on daf Yutes. We're on Yutes Amud Aleph. The Gemara continues from the discussion we had yesterday. Machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Lending kelim to a non-Jew before Shabbos. So the Gemara says, let's go back. We're towards the top of Yutes Amud Aleph, Tanur Rabbanan. We did this yesterday, but we're going to review again today. Lo yaskir adam lo. I'm sorry. Lo yaskir adam kelim v'lanachir erev Shabbos. You cannot rent out any kelim to a non-Jew on erev Shabbos, meaning on Friday. But bedal v'hei mutter. But on Wednesday and Thursday would be fine. Kayotze boi mashach nigaros b'anachir erev Shabbos bedal v'hei mutter. And again, sending letters to a non-Jew is going to be prohibited on Friday, but on Wednesday and Thursday would be fine. Amalav rav Yosi akon v'amalav rav Yosi achasid shelo nimsa ksav yado b'anachri me'olam. For a different consideration, he would never deposit a letter in the hands of a non-Jew. For what the concern was, the Gemara doesn't really explain, but it was from the context of the Gemara, it sounds like that was an extra chumah that he took upon himself. But Tanur Rabbanan and Mashach Nigros B'Yad Nachri of Shabbos Ilam King Kotzes Lo Damim. Now the Braisa here continues to discuss the topic of sending letters using a non-Jew as your postman. Now, before we get on to the sending of the letters, you remember what we said yesterday? That this issue over here of renting out kelim to a Nachri on Erev Shabbos, so this is not an issue of Shvisas kelim. We talked about this yesterday. That's the machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, and we're not to assume that this brisa goes like Beis Shammai. But as we mentioned yesterday, this is a different issue. This is the issue of Schar Shabbos, of getting profit, earnings, based on work that was done over the course of Shabbos. So this is what Tosfos says. I quoted the Tosfos yesterday. Thank you. That if you give it to him right before Shabbos and you take it back from him right on Shabbos, so that means that you're gaining money, you're earning money based on performance, or in this case, rental, that was done exclusively over Shabbos. So that's an issue of Schar Shabbos. We did that yesterday. But today, though, we're going to now delve a little bit more into the sending of the letters. So Tanur Rabbanan and Mashach Nigars B'Yad Nachri of Shabbos Elim King Kotzin Lo Damim. Now, you could send a letter, says the Braisa, if you already set the price out, meaning we have a sophisticated postal system here in this country where you know exactly what the price, what the cost of sending a letter is going to be. It keeps going up every year, but that's a different issue. But we know exactly how much it's going to cost. So the Braisa says that if you know exactly how much it's going to be, so that would be okay. And then the Braisa says, well, it depends how far the postman is going to get. If he's going to, according to Beit Shammai, he has to be able to arrive at his destination before Shabbos. And according to Beit Hillel, no, he only has to arrive at the house proximate to the city wall before Shabbos. Now, v'halo katzatz. Now, the Gemara says, now, but wait a second. There was no price that was set. So, Amrav Sheshet Hachi Kamar. So, Rav Sheshet says, we're going to review the price and we're going to say the following. Im lo katzatz, if he didn't set the price, so, Beis Shammai Armei Mashi Agila Beiso, Beis Hillel Armei Mashi Agila Beiso Samach Chachama. So, then there's going to be a debate in terms of how far the postman needs to get to his destination. Now the Gemara says, okay, but I don't understand. Meaning you start from the beginning of the Braisa. In other words, go back up six lines from where we are right now and just reread the Braisa. Ein mishalchin igars bi'anachri erev Shabbos. That you're not allowed to elim gim kotzis lodomim unless you set the price. So now we're confused. Meaning the first part of the Braisa says you're simply not allowed to send mail with the postman. Again, we're assuming now the postman is not Jewish. You're not allowed to send mail with the postman before Shabbos if the price is not set. And then the second part of the price says, well, if he gets to the to a certain point by Shabbos, so then it would be okay.
Rabbi, I think this is more of a courier service because you're giving this guy a mail, man to man, not putting it in a box.
Well, okay, I'll get to, yeah, give me a moment. So, lo kasha had the kviya beidavar. So the Gemara says, well, this is not a problem at all. The difference between the Reisha, where it's the Reisha says you can't do it, and the Sefer that says that you can do it, that is dependent on whether or not there's a base davar or there's no base davar. Now, I say davar, you may read it as doar. I know in modern Hebrew, Doar is a reference to the mail, to the postal service. So, but over here in the context of the Gemara, it's probably not what it means. And if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi does not explain it that way. Now let's take a look at Rashi. Now the way Rashi understands the Gemara, it sounds like this. Now Rashi over here is very short, he doesn't say a whole lot. So we're going to have to do a little bit of conjecturing within Rashi. Meaning, look, the price, if you paid the set amount, if you fixed amount the price... Sorry, let me speak a little bit clearer. If you fixed the price of how much it's going to cost to deliver this correspondence from me to a recipient, so then it's fine. So then it would be no problem, because then when the non-Jew is working, meaning it's his job, it's like he's a kablan, meaning he's doing it all on his own. In other words, you gave him the mail, you already paid him, he'll do it when he wants to do it. So the fact that he's going over Shabbos, that's fine. Meaning you're not asking him to go on Shabbos. If you're asking him to go on Shabbos, that's a different story. That's a Amir La'akam. But let's assume that you're not asking him to go on Shabbos. So if the price is set and you gave him the letter before Shabbos, that would be fine. What the issue is, however, is when the price is not set. Now, when the price is not set, so that means that he right now is employed by you. So, right, and in other words, and you're going to pay him after the job is done, and somehow you're going to negotiate the price afterwards, which is never the best move, but, okay, anyway, but fine. And now, what the Bryce is arguing about is whether you can or cannot do that. So, when can you not do that? So, the Gemara says that's when there's no Beis Davar. When can you do that? That's when there is a Beis Davar. So, the obvious question is, well, what does that mean? So if you look at Rashi, I'm going to read Rashi inside, Beis Davar, Shalton Ha'ir. We're talking about some sort of mayor of the city. Let's call him the city mayor. V'lo regilin l'shloch igaros. And you know who you usually send correspondence to? To the mayor. Now, he's fielding complaints. For whatever reason why, I don't want to get too involved in this, for whatever reason why, that's who the mail usually goes to. And so from Rashi, what it sounds like is the following. Now again, that's all we're getting from Rashi, so there's not a lot to work with. But what it sounds like is as follows. If you know that the letter's going to get there, so in other words, you sent it with this non-Jew, and you sent it to a recipient, and you now know that the letter's on its way, and it's going to get there, so that would be fine. I provided, of course, that he actually get there before Shabbos, or according to Beis Hillel, that he get to the outer wall before Shabbos. But the point is that the letter's going to get there. The letter's not going to come back. If, however, you're not sending it to the Beis Davar, so that means that you're sending it to a person who doesn't normally expect to receive mail. Now, if he doesn't normally expect to receive mail, so what does that mean? So probably what's going to happen is, or not probably, let's even just say possibly, is that you're going to send it to the person... He's not there. And now what's the non-Jew going to do? He's going to turn around, come back, and bring it to you. So in other words, so there you run the risk of asking him to send a letter. And meanwhile, on Shabbos, what's going to happen? Return to sender. Meaning, the guy's not there. The guy's not used to getting mail. He wasn't available to receive it. So now the non-Jew is going to come back and send it to you. So from Rashi, what it sounds like is that, again, if the price is set and you paid him, it's done and it's done. But if the price is not set, so that means that he's on your time, right? He's employed by you. So now it depends. If you know that the mail is going to get there, if you're confident that the mail is going to get there, what the Gemara describes as being a Beis Davar, which means that you're sending it to a person who really is anticipating the letter, going to collect the letter, receive the letter, so then that's fine. If, however, you're sending it to somebody who's not used to getting it, that's going to be an issue. And that would be unacceptable. Tanur Rabbanan, we continue in the Gemara. Ein mafligin b'sfina pachos migimol yamin kodem l'Shabbos. Okay, going on a cruise. Okay, it's popular. A lot of people do it. They go on cruises. I've traveled a lot over the course of my short lifetime, but I haven't gone on a cruise, and I really don't plan on it. I have no temptation. So the Braisa says you can go on a cruise on Shabbos. That's fine. The Braisa says, but you can't leave 3 days before Shabbos. So that means now I don't know how to count this, meaning that's important, and I don't know how to do that. Meaning you count day three, it has to be before day three. All right, so I'm not sure. But let's just say, for argument's sake, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So that means that if you're going to go on a cruise, so you got to leave already on Tuesday. Okay? Okay, so now b'medvar mamorim l'dvar harishus. Now that's talking about where it's a pleasure cruise. Aval dvar mitzvah shapidami. But if it's not a pleasure cruise, meaning you're going out because you're doing a mitzvah, pijon shvuyim. I know I just made it very dramatic, but pijon shvuyim. So that would be final posik gemal menas l'shpos. Now what you say to the captain of the ship is, look, Shabbos, right? You're not gonna go on Shabbos. You're not gonna travel on Shabbos. However, Eino Shava, it's Divrei Rebbe. But he doesn't actually need to stop on Shabbos. Basically, what you're alerting him to the fact is, don't captain the ship on account of me. Meaning, I'm traveling on the ship, but in other words, don't captain it for me. So in other words, so now when the captain is captaining the ship, he's not captaining it for you. There are other passengers on the ship, presumably. So that would be okay. Shimon Gamliel Omer Einot Sarech. So, and Shimon Gamliel says that's not necessary. Meaning that kind of, you know, that kind of stipulation which you don't even have to follow. Meaning, look, captain, you know, don't guide the ship for me. You know, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says that's not necessary. The boat trip from Tzur to Tzidon is a very short trip. It takes less than a day. So on Erev Shabbos, so that would be okay. That would be acceptable. Now, what we don't get from the Gemara is a very basic explanation. Meaning, all the Braisa says is don't do this. Don't go on a ship 3 days before Shabbos. And again, the question is very simple. Why not? What's the issue? And it's funny because the Braisa says, but if it's a Dvar Mitzvah, so then you're allowed to do it. So already you know that there's nothing wrong with it per se on going on a cruise. It just, there's some concern, but the Braisa nor the Gemara upcoming, that's it. We finished the discussion, is going to explain what the issue is. You ready? I have four explanations in terms of why you can't go on a cruise ship 3 days before Shabbos. So the two that are found on the daf. First of all, Rashi says nothing. Okay, I don't know why, but okay. So, but Rashi doesn't give an explanation. Okay, now start with Tosfos. Tosfos over here on the daf says, do you know what the issue is? The issue is Tosfos. You'll find it in Mafligim Misfina. I feel Tocha Tchum, even if it's not a Tchum issue, whether you're within Tchum Shabbos, Aser Mishum Shat. So Tosfos says very simply, I'll tell you why it's Aser, because you may come to swim. Meaning, you know how sometimes the boat goes down, right? Perhaps you heard there's this ship called the Titanic. So you may feel the need or find the need to go swimming, maybe because the boat, or I don't know. I don't know. I'm not sure if it.
Huh?
Yes. Right.
Swimming,
and then I don't understand according to Tosfos why that's a concern only the first 3 days of the trip.
Right.
Why not after the 3 days? Maybe I'm not sure. Okay, that's what Tosfos says. It's an issue where you may come to swim, and swimming, as we know, has a rabbinic concern. So, but then the Gemara needs more explanation because basically then we have a rabbinic concern based on another rabbinic concern, meaning there's nothing awesome in a Torah to swim, but the swimming is awesome in a, is usher. Maybe you'll come to make a raft or other rabbinic consideration. So, okay, that's Tosfos' explanation. Rabbeinu Chananah, which you will find on the daf, it's on the bottom of the Amud, two lines from the bottom. So he says, you know why you can't go on a boat on Shabbos for the first 3 days? Because that's very shallow water. And shallow water, so that means that you're within 10 tefachim of the bed of the sea. So within 10 tefachim, I mean, that's very shallow. You're talking about a boat going within 3 feet water. Now, over the course of my stay here in Florida, so I did navigate a boat and I did get stuck because I I captained the ship in shallow water. So, I do understand that. But in other words, but let's understand halachically, what's the concern? We talked about this before, meaning that when you're within 10 tefachim, so now you are connected to the ground, anything above 10 tefachim, you're in no man's land, literally no man's land, halachically no man's land. Rishus HaYachid, we talk about, is the Ola Adler Rakia, goes up to the heavens, but we're not talking about Rishus HaYachid, we're talking about just simply being within a certain tchum, being within a certain parameter. If you could, that was a funny statement, but if you could float, if you can float in air, so then you could travel wherever you want, meaning because there's no issue of tchum, because you're above 10 tefachim of the ground. Now, I know that's a funny statement, but every time you go on a boat, you know what you're doing? You're floating in air. Meaning because the sea, right, the sea level, that's not the ground level. Meaning that's water on top of ground. Where's the ground level? That's a seabed. So if you're in very deep water, you can travel as long as the distance you want. You're not violating tchum, because the only time you violate tchum is when you're within 10 tefachim of the ground. So right. So in other words, airplanes also would be the same story.
Air balloons
also would be this. You could take a hot air balloon ride on Shabbos. I really don't recommend that. But and I'm sure there are other considerations which I'm not thinking about right now. But vis-a-vis tchum, it would be fine. So what Rabbeinu Chananel says is that for the first 3 days, so you're going to be within tchum of the seabed. And so therefore, there's a good chance that you'll be traveling outside of tchum for those first 3 days. That's Rabbeinu Chananel. Then according to Rabbeinu Chananel, you're going to have to explain, well, if that's the concern, so why the Dvar Mitzvah, would it be okay? Okay, good. That needs more explanation. You know what the Rif says? The Rif says that the issue is being seasick. Meaning for the first 3 days of the boat, what's a wonderful explanation. For the first 3 days that you're on the boat, so you're getting used to the boat, i.e. you're going to be sick for those first 3 days. And it's not right, says the Rif, to put yourself in a position where you know you're going to be uncomfortable and seasick on Shabbos. So in other words, it takes 3 days to acclimate to the boat. So so only after the first 3 days. In other words, if you go on the boat on Tuesday, so now you have Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday to acclimate to the boat, so by Shabbos now you will be comfortable, and you will enjoy the boat ride. That is how the Rif explains the Gemara over here. And finally, the Baal HaMa'or, says that, you know what the concern is of the Raisa? Do you know why you can't go on a boat within 3 days before Shabbos? So the Baal HaMa'or says, because those are the most perilous days. I mean, the first 3 days when the boat is first leaving dock and beginning its excursion, so those are the days where there very well may be a sakana, a risk, and you may need to be mechallel Shabbos. Now, of course, if there is a sakana, so you are mechallel Shabbos. But what the Baal HaMa'or says is that you shouldn't put yourself in a position where you're going to need to be mechallel Shabbos. So therefore, the Baal HaMa'or writes that first 3 days, essentially what you're doing is you're putting yourself in a position where you're going to have to be mechallel Shabbos as a sakana. So so with this Baal HaMa'or, so there's a lot of discussion. We're not going to have it. I'm just going to raise awareness. There's a lot of discussion of taking elective surgery before Shabbos. Well, you know that now, because of the elective surgery, let's say you had it on Friday. So that means that Shabbos, probably, you're going to have to do a lot of things to be Mechal Shabbos. Now again, once you're there, of course you do it. But to put yourself in that situation, that you should avoid. So that's that is the Baal HaMa'or on the Gemara. Okay, continuing, Tanu Rabbanan. We're back in the Gemara. We're in the middle of the Amud. Ain't sarin al ayaro shall nachrim pachas migimol yamin kodin l'shabbos. Laying a siege. So we got to plan it out. So there are a lot of things to take into consideration. You want the time of month to be right. You don't want the light of the moon. In other words, you know, there's a lot to plan when you lay a siege. So another consideration, says the Braitha, is now within 3 days of Shabbos. But if you started the siege, so obviously don't take a break for Shabbos, meaning it's war right now. We're laying a siege. So you continue, V'chena Yashamai Omer, Adri Dita, Fil B'Shabbos. And Shammai would say this as well, that once you started the siege, so right, don't take time off for Shabbos, that would probably make the siege ineffective. So you siege through Shabbos.
By conquering,
you need to do that. The Gemara tells us the minhag of Rabbi Gamliel shayu nosin kli lavan lekobitz gimel yam kodesh l'shabbos. Now, as we explained back in the Mishnah, Rabbi Gamliel holds like Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai says that your kelim can't do malacha on Shabbos. So Rabbi Gamliel would give his white clothing. White clothing took 3 days to launder. It was serious work to launder white clothing. So he would give it to the launderer with before 3 days before Shabbos. Which swim my filber of Shabbos. Now colored clothing, that's not a big deal. Colored clothing is just a 1 day job, it's very quick. Now the obvious conclusion is it's harder, more time consuming, and therefore should cost more money to clean your whites than it is to clean your colors. So he would have colored clothing. I know that's not very yeshivish, but he would have colored clothing, and he would give it to the launderer. Right? The launderer in the Gemara, throughout the Gemara, is always referred to as a katsra. Do you know why? I'm not making this up, because the katsra comes from the word kotser. You know what happens when you send your clothing to the launderer? It gets cut down to size. Okay, it's not a new phenomenon. It shrinks. So he give it to the launderer. So Amalei kama baisi lavei, and so now they're negotiating how much is it going to cost Amalei kedechivra. So the launderer says to Abaye, well, I'm going to charge the same for colors as I do for white. So Amalei kvar kedumcha rabbanan. So Abaye says, please, all you need to know is a little bit of Mishnah and a little bit of Gemara. And you know that that was ridiculous. Meaning, you want to charge me the same for colors as it is for white? It takes three times as long to clean the whites as it does colors. That's ridiculous. No way you could charge me the same. Amar Abaye Haiman, Diyav Manal Katsra, Bimishcha Nesiv Leu, Vimishcha Nishko Mine. And Abaye gives some very sound advice. When you give your clothing to the launderer, measure it. Measure when you give it to him, measure when you take it back. Because if it comes back longer than you had it, so that means that he stretched it. And if it comes back shorter than when you gave it, that means that he shrunk it.
Or somebody else.
Right. that too. V'shavin eilu ve'eilu shetoanim. Now, many machlokas that we found in the Mishnah between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel about Shvitzas Kalim, about how your Kalim cannot do Malach on Shabbos, but they do agree about taking the beam and putting it down on the press. Why do they agree? So the Gemara explained, now I already explained this back in the Mishnah, and the Gemara here is going to spell it out. So why, on all the other cases, Beit Shammai was Machmer, why here was he Mekel? Hanach the Avilu b'Shabbos mechayev chatos gazru b'hu b'Shamay erev Shabbos im chashecha koros b'Tzabad v'igule hagas the Avilu b'Shabbos lo mechayev chatos lo gazru. And the difference is as follows: because with all the other activities mentioned in the Mishnah, the cooking, the lighting of the lamp, all those activities are isurei malacha, and they are isurei da'araisa. Okay, they're real malachas. Masha'in came when I put the pressing beam over the olives or over the grapes, they were already cut, juices already coming out. This is just further extraction of the juice. Now that's asur, you cannot do it on Shabbos, but it's only asur midrabbanan. Beit Shammai's chumra of shvisas kelim is only for malachas da'araisa, not for Isurei Derabanan. So in other words, your Kalim, let's put it this way. I'm going to just restate it a different way. Your Kalim, even though they need to be Shomer Shabbos, they only need to worry about the Araisas. Your Kalim, I mean, I understand they're inanimate objects, they're not worrying, but they don't have to concern about, or you don't have to concern about Isurei Derabanan when it comes to your Kalim. Now, Mantana Dechomita Dasim Yimele Shapidami. Now, who is of this opinion? So Amar Rav Yosi, Rabbi Chanina, Rabbi Yishmael Hi. So the Gemara now, is it, this next bit of Gemara is going to be a little bit confusing. Let me outline it first, and then we'll see it inside. Basically, what the Gemara is going to say is like this. We're looking for the Tana who says that once the pressing has begun, further continued pressing is not an Issur D'Oraisa, it's only an Issur D'Rabbanan, or perhaps even Mutar Lagamrei. But in other words, it's not an Issur D'Oraisa. Now, there are going to be two Amoraim involved in this discussion. One is One is Rav Yossi, Rabbi Chanina. And the other Amora is Rabbi Elazar. Now, I say it's going to be a little bit confusing because they're going to quote now two different Tanaim. Each Amora is going to quote one Tana who basically is going to be the author of our Mishnah, who subscribes to our Mishnah. And then what the Gemara is going to do is, why didn't each Amora use the other Tana to explain our Mishnah? And the Gemara is going to find differences. And the other part that makes this Gemara a little bit confusing is that Rabbi Elazar the Amora, you know who he's going to quote? He's going to quote Rabbi Elazar the Tana. So that is a little bit confusing, but all right, but that's how basically the Gemara is going to go. I'm Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, Rabbi Shmali. So he says, you know who this our Mishnah is following? It's following like Rabbi Shmali. We learned in a Mishnah, or I should say, we will learn in a Mishnah. Hashum, v'haboser, v'hamelilos, sheraskim mi'ba'od yom. If you have garlic or grapes or grains where you already crushed them from before Shabbos, Rabbi Shmali Omer, yigmor mishetachshach. Any of the liquid that comes out, the juice that comes out, a juice coming out from grains, that one I don't get, but maybe they're fresh and juicy, fine. So anyway, but any juice that comes out subsequently is fine. Rabbi Kiva Omer, top of the Testament base, lo yigmor. And Rabbi Kiva says, no, you cannot leave it on the press before Shabbos, even though you started the process before Shabbos, because even the subsequent juice is going to be prohibited. Good. So in other words, so we have now the first Amora of Yossi Rabbi Chanina, and the Tana that he is resting on, so to say, is Rabbi Yishmael. Good. That's number one. Two. Rabbi Elazar Amar, Rabbi Elazar he. Okay, you see that? That was a little confusing.
How can I say it?
No, Rabbi Elazar the Amora is saying that it's Rabbi Elazar the Tana.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Rabbi Elazar, by the way, Rashi points out, the Amora is Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas. Okay? And the Tana...
Why did you say Rabbi Elazar?
Because he was an Eretz Yisrael.
Oh,
Amoraim of Eretz Yisrael go by Rabbi. So, and the Tana that he's quoting is, says Rashi, Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua.
Mm.
Okay, good. Anyway, but Rabbi Elazar quotes Rabbi Elazar. Good. Did not want to the Mishnah. Chalos v'asher riskemer of Shabbos. So here we're talking about the honeycombs. Now in the honeycombs, same basic story. You press on them, the honey gets extracted. It oozes out. V'yatzo me'atzman also Rabbi Elazar matir. Now if you started the process before Shabbos, all the honey that oozes out, even on Shabbos, well, according to the Tanakam, it's Aser, but according to Rabbi Elazar, it would be fine, it would be Mutter. So again, so now we have two Tanayim. Basically, each one of them basically says the same thing. As long as you started the pressing before Shabbos, all subsequent juice that is extracted is going to be acceptable on Shabbos. So therefore, our Mishnah that says that Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel agree that as long as I put on the beam before Shabbos, all the juice that comes out on Shabbos would be fine, and there wouldn't be no problem of Shvisas Kalim, even according to Beis Shammai. And so now the Gemara just simply does a little bit of fact-checking. Rav Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, my time alam, Rabbi Elazar. Now, why did Rav Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, go like Rabbi Elazar and say that the Tana of our Mishnah is Rabbi Elazar? Amracha, hasam demikaro, chlevesof ocha. Well, the case of the honeycomb, not good. Why? Because that's not classic dash. Classic dash, or if you want to say mefarik, or if you want to say schita, is basically when I take a food and what do I extract out of the food? A liquid. That's classic schita. Here, it's food, meaning the honeycomb is a food, and what I extract out of that? Food. Okay, mikara ocha vahashta, I'm sorry, the mikara ocha vasof ocha, hacha, mikara ocha vahashta mashke, but over here, I'm talking about grapes and the juice. I'm talking about olives and the oil. So it's different. So in other words, so I don't know if Rabbi Elazar of the honeycomb would necessarily agree with our Mishnah. And the Gemara goes the other way. Rabbi Elazar, I'm lecha hashamina. I'm sorry, before we go the other way. Rabbi Elazar, I'm lecha hashamina. Rabbi Elazar, dafi lezeisim v'navinam mishamri. Well, I happen to know, says Rabbi Elazar, that Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua, the Tana, would agree by grapes and olives. The haki also ravoshia minar daas of aysim asisa biyadei zaysim anavi shariska meir of Shabbos viyatsu meyatsman asurin revelaz revishim and matirin. I have a brisa. And the brisa says very clearly that if you started the process before Shabbos, even if it's grapes and olives, it would be fine, at least according to Rabbi Elazar, on Shabbos. So Rav Yossi Bar Bichanina Braisa Lo Shmi Alei, and Rav Yossi Bar Bichanina was just simply not familiar with that Braisa. Good. Now let's go the other way. Rav Elazar, my time alo amaker, Rav Yossi Bar Bichanina. Now Rabbi Elazar, how come he didn't cite Rabbi Yishmael as the author of our Mishnah? So I'm lechalavit malam, Rav Bar Bichanina, Rav Yochanan. Because even that position of Rabbi Yishmael, that was discussed already by Rav Yochanan. And Rav Yochanan said the following, b'mechusarim dicha d'chule ama lo pligi, ki pligi b'mechusarim shchika. Meaning, if it was just cut, but not ground up, so then there's no debate. You can't start the process before Shabbos and continue on Shabbos. The only time that there's a disagreement, and the only time that Rabbi Yishmael would say it's okay, is only if the grapes and olives were finely cut. Then and only then is Rabbi Yishmael going to say it's okay. V'haninami kimistuchusar indicha damo. And over here, it was not pounded, and even Rabbi Yishmael would say that it's not okay. That is how Rabbi Elazar would... that's why Rabbi Elazar did not cite Rabbi Yishmael as the author of our Mishnah.
So that part means that part would be a deraisa.
Yeah, correct. Hore Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, Rabbi Yishmael, and Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, paskens like Rabbi Yishmael. So Rabbi Yishmael, of the bottom of the previous Amud, who says that Boser, Shum, Melilos, as long as you ground it up before Shabbos and you pressed it, any of the juice that comes out on Shabbos would be mutter. Now the Gemara goes on a little bit of a detour for the next, let's say 10-15 lines until the next Mishnah. Shemin shel bedadim, umachatzal shel bedadim. The Gemara turns to a muksa discussion. Now I think this is the first time that we're talking about muksa in the Masechta of Shabbos. I don't think we discussed it previously. And muksa will be a topic that we spend a lot of time to as we arrive towards the end of the Masechta. Prakim of Shabbos are dedicated to the topic of muksa. Muksa basically means anything that is not set aside for Shabbos. Now, utensils that have utility, which are permitted for Shabbos, generally are set aside for Shabbos. So your plates, your dishes, your forks, your knives, all are generally set aside for Shabbos and are therefore not muksa. Okay. The Gemara over here points to things that are somewhat obscure. And the truth of the matter is, I'm not 100% sure what we're even describing right now. And the question is whether or not they are muksa. Shemesh shel bedadim. So I'll tell you what Rashi says, although Tosfos disagrees. But Rashi says we're talking about the oil and the olive press. The oil that basically gets into the corners of the olive press, and the owner of the olive press is not entitled to that oil. It usually goes to the worker. Okay? Umachasol shel bedadim, and the mats, Rav Aser Ushmuel Shari. So Rav says that it is muksa, Shmuel says that it is not muksa. Now, let's go on in the Gemara, come back, we'll discuss a little bit more. Hani karche dezuze, Rashi says karche dezuze, Rashi gives a couple of explanations of what it might be. Mats that are placed to cover merchandise on the boat. One explanation of Rashi. Anyway, Rav Asur Shmuel Shari, so Rav says that that's going to be muksa, and Shmuel says it's permissible. I'm Rav Nachman Eiz Lechalba. Now, we're talking about animals. Now, animals, Shabbos? No. Animals, Yontif. That's better. Meaning, on animals, you know you're allowed to go into your backyard, take the goat in your backyard, right? I'm sure we all have. And you can, on Yontif, you can shecht it. Correct. Right? Ochel Nefesh. You're allowed to do that. But there's a muksa consideration. When we get to Masechta Beitza, we're going to see a lot of this. That on Yontif, right, in other words, there are a lot of more heterim, but there's still always a muksa consideration. So let's say I have a goat, lechalba. And what do I plan? In other words, in this goat, I set aside for milking. Or rachel l'gizasor, I have a sheep, but she's for shearing. Tarnagolos l'beitzasah. I have hens, but they're for egg production. Viturid deridya. Now, I do have an ox in my backyard, but I need that ox for plowing. I use that ox for plowing. Vitamre de iska. And I have dates, but I was planning on selling them.
This guy's rich.
So Rav Asar Shmuel Omer Mutter. So again, now, machlokus between Rav and Shmuel. Rav says they're all muktzah, and Shmuel says no, they're not. They're fine. V'kamif l'gibah plukta de Rav Yehuda v'Rabbi Shimon. Now, you notice, by the way, I hope you notice the trend. Rav, on all these cases of muktzah, says aser, and Shmuel says it's always mutter. The Gemara says this is the machlok between Rav Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. In Masech debates, we're going to see this a lot. Here in Shabbos, we'll see this as well. There's a general debate. In other words, we all agree that there's muktzah on Shabbos. There's an idea of muktzah on Shabbos. The debate is, how far-reaching is this concept of muktzah? So Rav Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon disagree. I believe Rabbi Shimon is more makel. I think he is. Okay. And so therefore, according to Rabbi Shimon, he has a very limited definition of what muktzah is. Anything we just described, according to Rabbi Shimon, is not muktzah. So essentially what Shmuel is basically saying is, I side with Rabbi Shimon, where Rav says, no, I agree with the more expansive definition of muktzah, I side with Rabbi Yehuda. Now, this machlok of muktzah, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, we're going to come back to a number of times in the Masechta. Here in our parak, it finds its way kind of like Al HaDerech. How tamida da'ori becharta darigas. There was a certain student it's the name of a place. So, all right, whatever the case is. But basically, he had beams of wood. Right? Rashi explains. Rashi writes the tradition that he had. Okay, his grave is still there. Anyway, Rabbi Shimon. So so this particular student paskins like Rabbi Shimon. Good. So Shamti Rav Amnuna, Rav Amnuna put him in Cher, meaning he was Makel, and Rav Amnuna says, no, we don't accept that. V'haka Rabbi Shimon Sfirlai, the Gemara says, but I don't understand. All he basically says, the Allah is like Rabbi Shimon, which, oh, by the way, Shmuel did the same thing as well. So Ba'asar de Rav Hava, lo ibai leila me'eved hachi. The Gemara's response is, you gotta know where you are. Right, you gotta be somewhat self-aware. Meaning, it wasn't that he passing like Rabbi Shimon, that in of itself would have been fine. He was in Rav's community, passing like Rabbi Shimon, that's where he went wrong. Two students, one saved in one kli, and the other one saved in another kli. This takes us again later on to the Masechta, when there's a fire. So what can you save from the fire? How do you save it from the fire? Stay tuned later in the Masechta, much later in the Masechta. We're going to explain this a lot better. In the meantime, however, we're going to go on. Okay, good. All right, so now we're continuing. What have we been talking about up until now? Machlokes between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, essentially about your kalim. What can your kalim do or not do before Shabbos? Now we talk more about preparation for Shabbos, and now we get to the the meat and potatoes. Okay, maybe not potatoes, but we're pretty close. In other words, you're going to cook food for Shabbos. You can't cook food on Shabbos. So basically, that food's got to be ready before Shabbos. Ain't sol and basar, batzol, beitza. You can't cook your meat, your onions, your eggs. Ela kadeshi yid sol mi bal yom, unless it's finished cooking from before Shabbos. Einos and pasta tanorim chashecha. You can't put your bread in the oven right before Shabbos. Velo charara agabe chalalim. Don't take your cake and put it right on top of coals. Unless a crust forms around the bread or cake from before Shabbos. In other words, simply put, the food's basically got to be cooked or baked before Shabbos. Rabbi Lazar Omer Kadeshi Kramatachton Shalom. Now Rabbi Lazar says that the bottom of it has to be crusted. Stay tuned, we'll explain what that means in just a moment a little bit better. Mishashulin es haPesach b'tanur im chashecha. Now, you're Karban Pesach. So what normally happens? I shecht it on Erev Pesach in the afternoon, Bein Harbayim, later in the afternoon. And then we roast it. Now, when do you roast it? Seder night. obviously. Now, Seder night, it's Yontif. You're allowed to do it. But what if Yontif and Shabbos intersect? And so now Yontif is Shabbos. So here's the problem. It's a very simple one. You can't roast your carbon Pesach on Shabbos. It's not a problem. You roast it before Shabbos. But what the Braisa allows, sorry, not the Braisa, what the Mishnah allows you to do is put it on the pit right before Shabbos starts. Now, I know that goes against what we've just been talking about. Because what we've just been saying is that cooking has to be concluded by Shabbos. And meanwhile, by the Karban Pesach, we have latitude. We're allowed to put it on right before Shabbos. Why should that be? Stay tuned. The Gemara is going to ask that very question. Now, let's say you want to make a bonfire before Shabbos. Right? Not for cooking, obviously. But let's say it's cold. And I'd like to make a bonfire in order so that I have heat. Or, maybe it's outside and you want illumination. Whatever the reason is, you got to make sure that the wood has significantly caught fire. Because if you just lit the kindling before Shabbos, but the wood really hasn't caught fire, the concern is that the fire is going to go out, and on Shabbos, you know, you're gonna be all over that, and you're gonna go there and start stoking it, blowing on it, doing everything to try to resuscitate that fire. And so therefore the Chachamim were aware that this is a concern. Therefore, if you're gonna make a bonfire before Shabbos, most of it has got to catch. That's not always true. In the Beis Hamokad, right? Remember, we just not that long ago, we've been talking about the Beis Hamokad, right? It's the north side of the Azara. It's where the Kohanim would go and warm themselves up. There would always be a constant bonfire. That fire could be lit right before Shabbos, right? Remember, in the Beis Hamikdash, generally, the Shvus, the Suri Derabbanan, don't apply in the Beis Hamikdash. But outside the Beis HaMikdash, the majority of the wood has to catch fire. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Pepechamim Koshu. Now, if you're using the self-lighting coals, now I added the word self-lighting because I can't imagine he's talking about the coals like we have. You know those coals, they're a disaster. You try to light them, they don't light. But in other words, but apparently the Pechamim it's referring to coals that are very easy to light. Once they catch fire, rest assured that the fire will continue. Vikama. Now we start off with the Gemara's first question. It's a very basic question. The Mishnah says that if you want to make meat, eggs, onions, bread, it's got to be cooked before Shabbos. So the question is a very simple one: to what degree? Here's the Gemara. The Gemara says, roast it to the point of Michael Ben Jusai. Right? Which, again, is either a third or a half cooked. Right? The Rashi over here, you can look at it, you can underline it. Rashi over here says, Bishulo Shlish, a third of it cooked. So, like as I explained, if the recipe calls for 2 hours of cooking, so that's 120 minutes, so a third of that, 40 minutes. So it marnami amar ravasi amar rav yochan koshu kamachal ben josai ein bo mishum bishule nachrim. Another area in halacha where this comes up is bishalakam. You know that you cannot have a non-Jew cook food for you. Food, by the way, which you could not have eaten without cooking. Meaning, if he bakes an apple, that's fine. But in other words, meat or anything that you couldn't eat without the cooking, and he cooks it. So that is going to be prohibited. That's called Bishalakam. Avodah Zarah, second parak. So the Gemara there discusses this at length. If the food is already cooked to the point of Michael Ben Jusai, now it's defined as cooked, and now the guy wants to finish it up, so to say, fine. Tanya Chananya Omer Kol Shu Kamachal Ben Jusai Motel Lasho So Agabe Kirav Afa Pisha Negufa Ketuma. And here the Brisa quotes the opinion of Chananya. When we get to the third parak, we'll see more of this, where he says that as long as the food is cooked to Michael Ben Jusai, so then you can leave it even directly over the fire on going into Shabbos. Ein nosnin es hapas. Ibailahu. Tachton hech degabe tanor, odoma tachton hech degabe haor. Now, baking bread in the good old days is not the same as what we do now. What they would do is they'd take the dough, and they would stick it to the side of the oven, and so therefore now, it was being basically baked based on A, the fire that's directly underneath it, and B, by the heat of the wall of the oven. And the question now is, according to Rabbi Elazar, he says you need the bottom to get crusted. Which, right, bottom meaning what? So the Gemara, that's the Gemara's question. Now, there's an interesting debate over here between Rashi and Tosfos. I'll just share this with you outside. Which side crusts first?
Oh, yeah.
The side that is that's touching the side of the wall of the oven, or the side that is facing the fire? Now, I know. Let's do an experiment. Let's find out. Okay, and I understand that. But Rashi and Tosfos actually argue this point. Rashi says it's the side of the side facing the fire that crusts first. Okay, you agree with Rashi. Tosfos, it's first Tosfos on the Amud. I don't think it's a Matthias debate, but it does seem to be. But Tosfos, because of other considerations, including a Gemara Yerushalmi, does not agree with Rashi, and he says, no, the side facing the oven wall, that crusts first. Anyway, I'm with you. Tashma Rabbi Elazar Amekadishi Kruma Panah Hamidu Bakim Betanur. So Rabbi Elazar says that it's the side facing the wall of the oven, which now let's go like Rashi. Let's just say the Gemara like Rashi. Which according to Rashi, what is Rabbi Elazar basically telling us? I need both. I need both the side facing the fire, which crusts first, and I need the side facing the oven wall, which crusts second. So I need both to crust in order for me to allow the bread to be put in the oven going into Shabbos. According to Tosfos, Rabbi Elazar is a kula. Right. Mishashon is the Pesach. We're going to do a little bit more for today, and then we'll have to stop. My time in Mishum Demenei Chabur is the reason. So the Gemara says, because Karban Pesach, we have a Chabur, we're doing this in a group. We are Zrizin. We are more careful. And so therefore, we're going to remind one another, it's Shabbos. Don't touch that fire. So the Gemara says, you remember the daf we did a couple days ago? That if it's goat meat, which is really tender, so don't worry about it, because you're never going to want to expose it to air. And so therefore, you're never going to open up the oven door, and you're never going to want to touch the fire. So the Gemara says, so why over here are we so worried, when previously in the Gemara we weren't worried about goat meat? And the Gemara says very simply, because previously we were talking about goat meat where the goat meat was cut up. And so therefore now it's a sensitive meat and it's already cut. Nobody will touch that oven. Nobody's going to open the oven. No one's going to stoke the fire. Here, however, we're talking about the Karban Pesach. One of the most basic rules of the Karban Pesach is that it's roasted whole. And because it's roasted whole, so therefore it's not so sensitive. It's not so delicate. And so therefore, had it not been for the fact that we're the B'nai Chabura and we're going to remind each other, there would have been a Gzera D'Rabbanan, because somebody would have opened up the oven, see the goat, and stoked the coals. So that's why you need the explanation of we are the B'nai Chabura, and that's why we would not have touched the fire. Okay, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up. Tomorrow, God willing, we'll finish the Perek. Start the second Perek of Shabbos.